What is the real meaning of renunciation? When we attain the level of bhava bhakti, a devotee will no longer be attached or desirous to enjoy material objects. We lose the internal taste, the internal attraction. At the level of bhava, a devotee will only like, will only have a liking or a taste for serving Krishna. Bhava bhakti is not disturbed. A bhava bhakti is not disturbed even if there's a cause for disturbance. He actually genuinely has no interest in sense objects. He's not, at the level of bhava, one is no longer controlling his senses. He's no longer actively restraining his senses or preaching to his mind or senses. He actually has no interest in sense objects. This control is there during the sadhana stage, Vaidhi sadhana, Raghunuga sadhana. One is consciously exercising control over his mind and senses. Vacha vegam, manasakura vegam, jiva vedam, udrapasta vegam. But once we attain the platform of bhava bhakti, there's no more need to control the senses. This will become our nature. It's in nature that he loses all taste. One will actually lose his taste and attraction, interest and mundane pleasure. Sense enjoyment will no longer appeal to one, because one will have no other desire but to serve Krishna at the level of bhava. Therefore, a bhava bhakti can live anywhere and remain unperturbed. Nothing can disturb his mind. No sense pleasure of this material world can agitate his mind. It's impossible. Because the taste itself is lost. The taste for material pleasure is no longer there. When we become agitated or disturbed in association with sense objects, this happens because we have the desire inside us. We still have desire for man or woman or eating or sleeping. It's still within us. It's pushing us. It's agitating us. It's a vegam. So that's at the level before one attains bhava and a fixed loving mood towards Krishna and intense feelings of service and surrender, submission and attachment. Whenever we read Shastra, we always hear and we always read that woman is maya. Dangerous for man. Of course, for women, that means man is maya. Man is dangerous for woman. But it's, why is that? It's because the man himself has a desire inside. Woman is maya or dangerous for a man. It's not because it's so much the woman's fault, but it's because the man himself, he has desire inside. If the woman has no desire to enjoy, if the man has no desire to enjoy women inside, then who's dangerous? The problem is not lying outside. So we sometimes say, woman is maya, woman is dangerous. Actually, I am maya, I am danger, I am a threat to my own self. I am a threat to my own safety. I am maya for myself. I am dangerous to myself. It's like a madman with a gun. If a madman has a gun, he may just shoot himself, put it to his head and shoot himself. So this is the point. That the problem lies within. If the man has no desire to enjoy a woman inside, then what is the danger from women outside? There's no danger. Because he sees their part and parcel of Krishna. They're all energies of Krishna. They're gopis. They're to be engaged in Krishna's service, not to engage all beautiful women in Krishna's service, not to enjoy them. That is sense gratification. He has no feeling of mamta, of mindness towards women. He has no desire to possess or to control or exploit them. That's not within him. So the problem is not lying outside. It's not the problem with women or women or maya. The problem is inside. The root cause lies inside. But when a person doesn't have desire inside his heart or mind to enjoy the objects of this world, then the object is no longer a danger. It's like a snake, a poisonous snake, if the fangs are removed. If you take away the teeth, which have the poisonous fangs to puncture the skin and pump in the poison, if they're removed, then there's no threat from that snake. So the snake of desire, the fangs of sense desire are removed from our mind, then it will not bite any objects of this material world. We cannot become poisoned by persons or objects of this world. Therefore, a pure Vaishnava does not need to renounce this material world. And go to the forest, saying that because the material world is full of attraction. Vaishnava lives in the material world, but his angle of vision changes. Now he sees every object as an item to be used for Krishna's service, because he does not think of himself as the enjoyer and master. This philosophy is taught by Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada often quotes this verse. This verse is from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first division, second wave, verse 255, which describes the principle, famous principle, Yukta Vairagya, true renunciation, dovetailing everything favorable in the service of Krishna. Anasaktasya Vishayan Itarham Upayunjata Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagyamuchite Prapanchika Taya Buddhya Hari Sambandi Vastuna Mukshavi Prityago Vairagyam Falgo Katyate. So the idea is that a devotee is neither enjoyer nor renouncer, nor a yogi. He's not a bogi, tyagi, or yogi. He's simply a sevaka. He doesn't desire mystic perfections or enjoyment or renunciation. He's simply a servant. One who is not attached to satisfying his senses, yet accepts everything in relation to Krishna, is rightly situated above possessiveness. However, if those desiring liberation renounce the things of this world, thinking them to be material, and fails to realize that everything is related to Sri Hari, such renunciation is considered superficial or false renunciation. Another translation: when one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts anything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of its relationship with Krishna is not as complete in his renunciation. So this is the idea. So the devotee changes his angle of vision. He tries to see, okay, now I'm Krishna conscious, now I'm Krishna's servant. Jivara Sarupaya Krishna Nityadas, and I don't own anything. I don't control anything. I don't possess anything. I can't create anything. Everything in this world and everyone in this world belongs to Krishna, created by Krishna. And all these items and all these persons are to be used only for Krishna's service, for his pleasure and happiness. Because now when a devotee has a correct vision and attachment to Krishna and proper bhav and bhakti bhav and seva bhav, he no longer thinks of himself as the center. He's not the center, he's not the master, he's not the enjoyer. This is the real meaning of renunciation, of vairagya. Renunciation, what does renunciation mean? Renunciation means no desire for enjoying. It does not mean not enjoying. There are so many poor people in India who cannot enjoy, but that doesn't mean they are renounced. They are all attached. They are very much attached to whatever little bit they may have. And if they get more, they'll also be attached to that too. So attachment does not depend on how much one has. Though people generally think, oh, this person, he has nothing. He only wears a gumsho, and he carries a water pot, and he has no other possession. But that actually doesn't prove he's renounced. Externally, someone may appear to have nothing, no possessions, no objects around him, be living like sadhu to some extent. He's a Vairagi sadhu. He's very detached. So temporarily, maybe he doesn't have anything because of circumstances. But in his mind or his heart, he may be planning to get something. He may say, okay, he does some renunciation, he lives very detached, he does everyday prakrama govardhan, but he's thinking, oh, maybe somebody at rich will notice me, that I'm a Vairagi, and then he'll build me a kutir, or maybe I'll become a guru, maybe I'll have a big ashram, and I'll have a big air-cooled or AC room. I'll be so much enjoying then. So internally, the person may be very wet with desire, although externally very dry. So when desire is not there, one may have many possessions, but yet be renounced. So one may have many possessions surrounded by many things, but he has no desire to enjoy them, and he's really renounced. So we must understand more deeply the meaning of renunciation. On a gross level, external level, anyone can judge and see that if someone is not carrying anything with him, then he's renounced. But this is a very simplistic understanding. Someone else may have crores and crores of rupees, but actually be renounced. Renunciation means to have no interest in enjoyment. Krishna has everything. Yet one of his opulences, as defines Bhagavan, is renunciation. Vairagya. So Krishna, if you look at Vishnu, Krishna is so renounced that he sleeps in an ocean, he has nothing. Yet enjoys for the sake of his devotees. Man sunyata. This is one of the qualifications of devotees, free from pride. So the devotee is, this is real renunciation, to engage everything in Krishna's service, beginning with his own desire. When one has desire to have or to hold or to enjoy or possess, then that is actually the enemy of devotion. That's the sign of the less advanced devotee. Sometimes the question is asked about the eternal relationship with the guru and whether the same, does the guru come again to liberate his disciples? The most acharyas say that it may not be the same jiva, the jivatma who's acting as guru in this life, sadguru, mahant guru. At the end of his life, he may return to Bhoma Vrindavan or the spiritual world, to engage in eternal service of Radha and Krishna. And he may not take another birth in this world for pracharak work or preaching work, although the disciples may take another birth due to lack of perfection. But generally, it may not be the same jiva. Krishna will make the arrangement through a different jiva. As Krishna says in Bhagavatam, Acharya Mam Vijanayan, actually the Acharya, you should understand the Acharya is me. So the guru can come to the disciple in any mood, in any figure or color, in any place, at any time. The position of the guru is very extensive and comprehensive. It's unlimited. That's why the Bhagavatam says Acharya Mam Vijanayan, that the guru is Krishna. In any way, in any form, the guru may come. maybe the same jiva, maybe another jiva. But in all cases, it's the mercy expression of Krishna. Krishna Kripa Murti. Krishna Kripa Shakti Murti, or Kripa Murti. Kripa Shakti Murti. The Guru is a form of Krishna's mercy, is a form of Krishna's Shiksha. Blessings, mercy comes through the form of Guru. It's all arranged and managed by Krishna. I'm sacrificing for Krishna. Some people are hesitant to surrender to Krishna. They feel they'll lose something. They've accomplished so much or gained so much in the material world. They think, oh, this, I've gained so much. But actually, Krishna is everything. Krishna says in Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhava mata sarvam pravartate iti matvava jantimam budubhava samanvita. Everything comes from me. I am the source of everything. The wise know this perfectly and engage in my service without deviation. So we sacrifice. If we attain Krishna, then we attain everything. If we know Krishna, we know everything. If we have Krishna, we have everything. So bhakti or surrender, devotion, means to establish a connection. If we establish such an intimate connection with such a compassionate, sweet friend, what more can anyone want? However, to attain a relationship with Krishna is not easy, is not cheap. We cannot attain anything valuable without paying the price. So what is the price? What do we have to do to attain a relationship with Krishna? To have the friendship, such a compassionate and sweet friend. What does it take to have a relationship with the infinite? To attain everything, to attain Krishna. We must be ready to pay for that most valuable thing. If something's very valuable, dear and costly, precious, then we have to, it will cost a lot of money. And if we want to have that, we have to have the purchasing power to get it. So if we want to attain such a high attainment of life, we should be ready to pay anything for it. No sacrifice should be too great for the value or the wealth of attaining Krishna, the great treasure. We should be prepared with this attitude. And Krishna, from Krishna's side, he is not harsh. He is not harsh or cruel. He just demands from us what is real. In other words, Krishna demands from us something that's realistic. It's feasible. It's possible. He's not demanding anything that's impossible. And what does he want? What is he charging? What is he looking for? Krishna wants our heart. Krishna wants our cooperation. Our free service. Love is voluntary. Love is free. Bhakti, devotion, priti, prem. It's free service. No demands. Ashoka Dasika. Ashoka Dasika, the gopis say in Gita, we are unpaid maidservants. We are serving you day and night, hand and foot, but we are not even being paid, so we can't really demand much. We simply beg you to return again and give us your darshan so we can continue to serve you as best we can, because that's all we know and that's all we want, is your pleasure and your service. Krishna wants our freedom. This is the bottom line. This is the scary part, the frightening part. Our freedom is what Krishna wants. If we offer our freedom to Krishna, our freedom will be improved. What does it mean? What is real freedom? Freedom means to offer our independence and free will to Krishna. Who is Krishna? Who is this Krishna? Okay, we say Krishna is God, but Krishna is the supreme hero. He's a hero because he's ready to sacrifice his life anywhere, at any time, for anyone. As he promises, as you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. I'm there for you. Countless examples where Krishna appeared as the superhero to save his devotees and protect his loving devotees. He's ready to give his life anywhere. If we surrender to the infinite, what do we get? If we give ourselves or surrender ourselves, give our freedom, give our independence, sacrifice our freedom to the infinite, give ourselves to the infinite, give our hearts to the infinite, give our service to the infinite, what do we get in return? If we surrender to the infinite, we will get the infinite in return. So who could not be charmed by such a transaction? This is not imagination. This is the law of love. Love moves in this way. We have to believe, at least we hope and we think, we have to believe that there is a plane of love. It's hard to imagine after living in the material world for so many millions of years, we're constantly being screwed and exploited, destroyed and debilitated and insulted and used and abused. But believe it or not, there is a plane of love. It's not just imagination. And Krishna, who is this Krishna? Krishna is the Lord of that plane. He's the Lord of love. And we can all live there. We can all live eternally there if we're actually faithful and have sincere will and sincere desire.